Hi, I'm Laura Cox Kaplan. Welcome to She Said, She Said podcast. Here on this podcast, we talk about the building blocks and the micro habits that help us create real and lasting influence. What do I mean by that? Well, we're talking about the kind of influence that helps you achieve your goals and whatever it is in life that you want to accomplish. But perhaps most importantly, it's the type of influence that helps you create real impact and that enables you to truly thrive. Hey friend, welcome to episode 288 of She Said, She Said podcast. Today's conversation is all about branding and rebranding, especially when you are contemplating or engaged in a career pivot. I am really excited to welcome this week's guest. She is the latest in our conversation, our She Said, She Said podcast, the Southern Sea collaboration series that we have been engaged in over the past several weeks. If you have missed any of the amazing women who have joined me as part of this series, seriously, friend, I urge you to go back and listen to them because they are all just incredible. Present company included, Aliza Licht is my guest today, and she is fantastic. She is, of course, an award-winning marketer, a best-selling author two times over with both of her books, including the latest called On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception. She's a personal branding expert, a speaker, and the founder of Leave Your Mark. We talk all about Aliza's amazing career journey. And trust me, it is not only amazing, but it is highly entertaining. If you don't know her and don't know much about her, you are going to love this conversation. And even if you do know her, I promise you, we are going to draw out some really interesting perspectives that you might not have heard from her before, including how to make sure that you are not leaving important brand equity on the table by allowing yourself to get too wrapped up in your organization. And this is especially true if you are part of a corporate environment and then ultimately decide to pivot into something else. We also talk about the importance of making sure that you are defining clearly for people what it is you want to do, as opposed to allowing them to fill in the blanks for you. There is so much incredible value and wisdom and really tactical perspective and guidance. Aliza's also a no BS kind of girl. She just tells it like it is in a very straightforward fashion. I think you are going to love this conversation. As always, friend, I would love to hear your feedback. So when you get a second, please be sure to let me know what you thought of the conversation. For now, though, here is the fabulous Aliza Licht and episode 288. Enjoy. Aliza, welcome to She Said, She Said.
Laura, I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so glad we got to meet IRL a couple months ago.
Well, me too. Of course, this conversation is part of our She Said, She Said podcast, the Southern Sea Collaboration Series, so I am really excited to talk to you and excited to talk to you in this context. But in the interest of full disclosure, I have been a big fangirl of yours for, I don't know, several years. I don't know you going all the way back to your original, one of the most interesting elements of your story, which I want to talk about today. But more recently, I have followed you a great deal and I love the advice. I have loved your book. So I'm thrilled to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
So for those who do not know you and have not been following you, I hope they will start doing so right now. But let's, if you don't mind, let's start the conversation by having you talk a little bit about what you do.
So my company is a consultancy called Leave Your Mark, based on my first book, Leave Your Mark, which is really brand strategy for businesses and personal branding for individuals. But I'm also a two-time author, Leave Your Mark and On Brand, and the host of the Leave Your Mark podcast. So I straddle all of these things, working really on marketing and digital strategy for clients.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have been in the digital strategy world for, well, since the very beginning. Take us back to that point and sort of how you got your start.
So my career started in fashion magazines. I was an intern at Harper's Bazaar, but that was after being pre-med in college and studying neurobiology and physiology. So I thought I was going to be a plastic surgeon. Yeah, crazy. So from there, I spent a couple years in magazines, and then I moved over to Donna Karan in the late 90s, really starting as a PR assistant coordinator in accessories, which really meant I spent my days packing and unpacking shoes and bags, essentially. And I grew up from there. My corporate career was 17 years at Donna Karan, ultimately ending with the title SVP of Global Communications. Mm-hmm. But in 2009, this was the start. If you think back, brands were – they had Facebook pages, but they really weren't on social media. And we were sitting around in a marketing meeting one day, and we were like, oh, maybe we should go on this platform called Twitter. And as a publicist, I was like, well, that's tricky because Donna Karan's a person and also a brand.
Right.
So who's going to write that copy for her and who's going to respond? And listen, Laura, it was the heyday of Gossip Girl. And I was like, well, what if we come up with this imaginary character called DKNY PR Girl, and we sort of have the brand go through her lens and give people a fly on the wall view into the world of Donna Karan. And we don't have to say who it is. And that's what we did. And legal decided that I was the only person allowed to tweet just for like safety reasons.
Yeah.
And so initiation by fire, I just started tweeting and it was like an alter ego. Like I really took it as like a pretend thing, but it caught on and it caught on in a really big way. And ultimately I was being myself anonymously. Mm-hmm. To the point that the character, if you will, just grew and grew and grew, and the following grew till around, I don't know, almost 400,000 followers organically.
Wow.
The secret got so big, we decided as a company to reveal me as the person behind the Twitter handle. And of course, I had a blog that was DKNYPRGirl.com. I had Instagram. I had all the things. I was tweeting. I was posting in Weibo in China in English. Like it was massive. And when we revealed me as the person behind this character, that news generated over 230 million media impressions.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible.
Wild.
Yeah. I'm so curious about so many things, and you sort of alluded to this initially. When the decision was made initially for you to take on this role, you said legal blessed that it could only be you.
Yes.
But maybe walk through, my guess is any legal department would be like, oh my God, you know, we can't possibly let her do this. We have, many of us listening to this podcast have all been there. Love the lawyers. They keep us out of jail. However, maybe walk us through the conversations that took place leading up to that, because my guess is it wasn't just a quick, oh sure, we'll let Aliza do this.
No, they wanted to approve every post and they wanted to approve every response. And I was like, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. And this was gut intuitive because remember, I wasn't on Twitter before either. So I am just going, you know, having looked at what's happening on Twitter, I was like, that's not possible. That's not what social media is. And I need to be able to respond. And I am a senior executive on this team. Like, I'm a publicist. I know my brand guardrails. Like I know where to draw the line. And I had management trust. And that is, to your point, the only way this would have worked.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you have any close calls? Were there moments where...
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's like, you know, keyboard warrior, right?
Right,
you
right.
do have a lot of confidence behind the screen, as most people do. And... first of all, I have this thing I came up with years ago, which is tweets on the cutting room floor. Mm. So I would write a lot of copy in just a moment of just like, I gotta say this. And then I would be like, wait, I think I should delete that. So at least I had the wherewithal to know when to put tweets on the cutting room floor. But I did a lot of red carpet commentary.
Mm.
And I did a lot of live tweeting of like the TV shows that were all the rage back then. So I was live tweeting Gossip Girl. I was live tweeting Scandal later on. I was live tweeting the Met Gala when Vogue, you know, live streamed it. I was live tweeting everything. And I was really, really snarky at times over the fashion, not the person.
Right.
But if you go after someone who has like a cult following, you can literally get death threats, which I did.
Wow.
When Twilight was out and Kristen Stewart was on the carpet, she looked great, but she was so visibly miserable. Like her face was just like, and I was like, I guess this wasn't the fashion. I was like, oh, and I'm sorry. By the way, I never mention names. I always say celeb X, celeb Y, stylist X, stylist Y, like never, ever, ever use names. And I was like, celeb X should really wear a smile with her gorgeous dress. And because I was live tweeting E and people were following along and they knew I was watching E, they figured out that it was Kristen.
Wow.
And then the floodgates opened and it was bad. I was like, can they find out where I live?
Yeah. Well, now, were you tweeting at the time as yourself or DKNY PR girl still?
DKNY PR girl.
Okay, interesting. So they really did. There was a clear element of anonymity. Was it not easy to figure out who you were? Were people not sort of putting the pieces together, given that you were in a senior marketing and comms role at DKNY?
So what's interesting about the way that I write is that this is feedback that I got from the public. I sound like I'm like a 22-year-old PR assistant, but I was really a mom of two kids and an executive. So there's nobody who thought it was me. In the industry, people were trying to figure out all the time, like Bergdorf's would come in for a market appointment to our sales team and be like, who is it? You need to tell us. And Felita Harris, who was the head of sales back then, she was like, I can't tell you. People didn't know. They didn't know. And then on the flip side, the people who did know kept the secret. Hmm. It was like a handful. And, in the beginning, people didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Like even my husband would be like, oh, are you talking to your fake friends again? I'm like, they're not fake. Right. They really like me.
So, Aliza, how did things change once people knew it was you?
Well, first of all, you lose a little bit of that confidence because now it's like everything you say,
right.
You're not only representing a brand, but you're representing yourself. So I think I was more conscious of my guardrails, but I didn't want to lose what everyone loved, which was the wit and the humor and the snarkiness in a playful way. So I tried to stay very true to that, but this did lead to a book offer. This is how I wrote my first book, Leave Your Mark.
Wow.
And somebody, Amanda Englander, called me cold one day in the office and she's like, hi, I follow you on Twitter. I read your blog. I think you should write a book.
Wow.
And I was like, thank you so much. That's so kind. I have a full-time job and two little kids. There's no way I'm writing a book. And I declined. I said, no.
No kidding.
Flat out no. Yes. I said no. And she was like, but you tweet like 100 times a day. Like that's a lot of words. And I'm like, okay, so? She's like, so like if you just did that and then just wrote that much, as much as you tweet, she's like, this would be so easy. And then when I really thought about it, I realized, well, A, she was right. And B, I didn't want to do it because I was scared to do it.
Interesting.
So when I really identified the reason, not that like, oh, I'm so busy, I'm a mom, whatever. I was like, you know what? It's not every day someone gets handed a book deal. So I ended up saying yes.
Did you write the book before you left DKNY or after?
Oh, yeah. No, I wrote the book in 2013
and
I left in 2015. So I wrote the book really after hours during the week. At night between like 9 and 1 in the morning, I have like a very disciplined system for how I get my word count. And Leave Your Mark really is what I consider to be like the Devil Wears Prada meets career advice, because I took all of my crazy fashion story journey and then added in all the career advice to it. Uh-huh. So that book is really for college age and young professionals, people that are just starting out in their career. But older people read it too and really enjoy it because the stories are so insane. I've changed all the names of the guilty. It's just a really fun read.
What was it hard to navigate that while working in a corporate role? Because again, back to legal, You know, anytime you're in a corporate setting and you're doing something on the side, a hobby, a side hustle, whatever it happens to be, you know, sometimes there can be some bleed over into the corporate brand and corporate environment. So maybe talk us through how you navigated that.
So this is an excellent question because this was really tricky for many reasons. Mm-hmm. Number one, forget about side hustle because I knew I was doing it after hours. It wasn't going to interfere with my work. The problem was I didn't want to write a book that my company would own.
Interesting.
So the first question was, if I write this book, who owns this? And of course, I can't write this book without telling this DKNY PR girl story, right? Like the whole, when we decided, I had asked my editor, Amanda, like, well, you know, what do you want me to write about? And she was like, you have carte blanche. I was like, that's like actually crazy. I mean, it was
that's the most insane thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I decided I wanted to write a career advice book, but at the same time, I wanted to write it based on my career. So how would I not tell the story? So DKNY was part of this story. So I was very friendly with our general counsel in Houston, and I said, listen, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to tell this story. And I guess what I'm asking you is, does the company want to be named? Do you want me to say that I work at DKNY? Or do you want me to just say company X? Because I've been very successful not naming celebrity names and saying celeb X, celeb Y, stylist X. So I can tell this story without mentioning DKNY, but quite frankly, there's millions of impressions of this story on the internet. So I think it would be silly, but let me know what you think. So she was like, no, it's fine. You can tell the story using the name. And then when I say that she read the manuscript maybe 20 times, I'm not exaggerating. I mean, LVMH was our parent company. Mm-hmm. So this book was extremely reviewed by God knows how many people. And in the end, you know, I was able to do it, but not without a lot of oversight.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so from that point, the book comes out. When did you decide to leave DKNY?
So the book came out in 2015 in May. Mm-hmm. And then in June, my mentor, Patty Cohen, decided to step down from the company. Mm. There was a series of changes. We had a new CEO. She decided to step down. And that was devastating. Mm. She's like family. I'd worked for her for 17 years. Donna was devastated. Everyone was devastated. And then in July, Donna stepped down because they got two new co-creative directors for DKNY. So then I was like, okay, I don't want to be here without Donna and Patty. Like, this is not the same place. Mm-hmm. And On Brand, my new book on personal branding, actually picks up from where this story sort of where Leave Your Mark left off. And it's a juicy little read as far as like what really happened behind the scenes. But essentially, that was the fire starter of me feeling like this place is going to be really, really different.
Yeah.
So I ended up resigning and giving them like 5 months notice and saying like, it's been amazing. I want to wrap this up with a bow, but I want you to know that I'm going to leave, you know, at the end of the year. And I actually produced the first fashion show of those two new co-creative directors, which was my last show.
Mm, interesting. Very interesting. Okay. I have so many questions. So because of the way that your transition played out, which is not that unusual, this is what happens in a lot of cases. You know, if you're working for a company or for an individual, you know, people's lives change, they make decisions, they impact the people that work for them. You had not been planning to depart. So I'd love for you to kind of talk through your initial thinking about what you were going to do next and how you sort of began to think about that. And then I want to get into the rebranding of yourself and under these circumstances, but maybe walk us through the process that you went through to figure out what was going to be next for you.
Oh, I love that you think there was a thought process. No, I thought my tombstone was going to be black and gold and say Donna Karen on it. What do you mean? So first of all, there's a concept that I coined called last name syndrome. And I wrote it in Leave Your Mark and I repeated it in On Brand because it's that important. Mm. If you suffer from last name syndrome, it means that you have replaced your own last name with that of your company. I was Aliza from DKNY. Mm-hmm. I worked with Virginia at Vogue. Every person who works at a credible brand does this.
Right.
Because it leverages the company for their own professional use.
Absolutely.
And there are many great reasons that you should do that. Mm-hmm. But the reason I wrote On Brand is because it's everyone's job to realize that they need to simultaneously be building equity in their own name. So by the end of my career at Donna Karan, and especially after I was out in the public as DKNY PR girl, because I was that character for 6 years, people would introduce me at parties. Oh, this is DKNY PR girl. I'm like, actually, my name's Aliza Licht. So I lost myself in that role.
Yeah.
And there were many positives and perks that came out of being that character, but I lost myself. So you don't want to suffer from last name syndrome. So when I, and this is exactly how On Brand starts, that first Monday in 2016 of me being without a job, I'm not the SVP of Global Communications anymore. I am not DKNY PR girl. I no longer have, let me just list it out. I no longer have an incredible garment allowance. I no longer have an expense account. I'm no longer part of, you know, prestigious LVMH. I do not have a title whatsoever. I was like, okay, now who am I? Mm-hmm. And it was this stark contrast of like, wow, I actually was thinking like, oh, I have this book and it came out and it's been amazing and people love it. But that's not like a job once it's out in the world. Right. Like there needs to be the follow-up, right? So it was really scary. So I decided that I was going to start consulting, and I'm putting that in air quotes, because what that meant to me was I guess naive I am. I went on Canva and I'm like, I am going to make a logo. I'm going to make a company. I'm going to make a logo and I'm going to post it on Instagram. And there is my company. And that's what I did. I literally was like, Leave Your Mark LLC. And there's more to the story and On Brand. But once you post that, you're like, okay, now what?
Now what? Yeah.
Interesting that the clients don't just call, because I really thought doing one Instagram post was going to do it. So I, for 10 months, I played this game of like, I'm a consultant. And then at 10 months in, my husband said to me, you know, Aliza, to be a consultant, you have to have clients. And I was like, I know, but I don't want any of the clients that want to work with me. And the people who I pitch apparently don't want to work with me. So here I am, like a consultant with no clients. And I wrote a piece in Forbes, which people can still read. It's called How You Know You're Not Meant to Be an Entrepreneur. And I basically gave myself permission to fail publicly, because at the time, especially back then, being an entrepreneur, especially for women, was like very, very trendy. It's mm-hmm. almost like if you were graduating from college and you weren't starting your own business, it's like, what are you even doing working for corporate? Like that's such a failure. And so I wanted to kind of destigmatize that and say like, you know what? Not everyone is meant to have their own business. So that piece went viral and a lot of people appreciated that I was super transparent about it. And then I decided to go back in-house and get a full-time corporate role. And I ended up going back as head of marketing and communications for a brand called Alice and Olivia. Mm-hmm. And I was there for 2.5 years until I started to get itchy creatively. And that's when I left to launch the Leave Your Mark podcast.
Do you think that the experience you had in at least kind of dabbling with the idea of being an entrepreneur helped prepare you to ultimately make that leap, you know, one job later?
No, because I think what I did that was very smart is I tried to sit down and really analyze why I was so unsuccessful the first time. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of reasons that I recognized really clearly. So the first thing I did, and this entire process is in On Brand. This is literally how it starts. I wrote down all of my capabilities. Mm. all of my capabilities, every single thing I know how to do. And then I crossed out every single thing I don't want to do ever again. Because I think at the point where you're really a seasoned executive, you've got a lot of tricks in your hat.
Sure.
But it doesn't mean you actually want to flex those muscles. So one of the big takeaways, I was like, oh, right. I've spent 17 years being a publicist and I never want to do PR again. That's a big, big problem. Okay.
Yeah. Like, well, so then. And it means a big shift in terms of your branding strategy. Big.
Yes. Big. So thinking through how I was going to make people understand that I wanted to focus on marketing and digital in a world where the internet said I was something else,
right?
DK, my PR girl was everywhere. People still think I do PR. I have to correct people all the time. So I figured out that. And the other thing I figured out was the experience of running around the city, having coffees and lunches and meetings and trying to get business meant flats. Like never wearing heels again, which was upsetting to me, and meant the subway, which also was very upsetting to me because the geography of trying to fit as much as I could in my day was exhausting.
Right.
And it required me to be in all parts of the city. And of course, you might be like, well, Elisa, why didn't you plan it so you could stay in like one neighborhood? Because everyone's all over the city. Mm-hmm. And if I got a meeting with someone that I really wanted to meet, I wasn't going to be like, I'm sorry, I'm only on the east side until 12 p.m. Can you? So I was like literally zigzagging Manhattan. So, and on the last thing I'll say is it was really lonely. Mm-hmm. Like I don't like to work alone. So when I decided to pick up this consulting thing after I left Alice and Olivia, when I realized that podcasting doesn't make money in the beginning because that was also a rude awakening, I was like, you know what? Maybe I need to function as more – I called it rent a CMO. Today we call it a fractional CMO and immerse into teams. And that has been the game change. So I immerse into teams – I could do it for an hour a week. I could do it for 10 hours a week. I have multiple clients at the same time. I'm on like 6 different Slack channels. I am a Gemini, so I can juggle. And it works. And that way, I'm doing what I love to do. I'm not doing it alone. I don't need to run around the city. And I have a very clear scope of work.
Yeah, yeah. I love all of that. I love that you had an opportunity to kind of explore and to figure out what that looked like, understanding what your working style is when sometimes it's not obvious to you. You've been doing one thing for a long time. And when you make a pivot, you don't always know how you're going to react to a new environment. So there's so much wrapped up there. You give great advice in On Brand. I have your book right here. On navigating a career pivot. And I really want you to dig into some of the tactical considerations as it relates to this, because I think a lot of people listening to this podcast are listening either with a potential career pivot coming, or maybe they are in the midst of some kind of, you know, downsizing or, you know, any number of reasons why you might be doing that. And in some respects, wanting to make a complete shift from what they were doing before to what they aspire to do, similar to what you did, where you did not want to do the PR aspects of those roles. You wanted to pivot more into marketing. So let's talk tactically about some of the initial things that you should do to begin to pave the way.
So the first thing to think about, especially if you're in a corporate role, is however long you think it's going to take for you to make this pivot, think of it as double. Mm. It is so much longer than you think to make big changes in your career. So you have to think about that from a financial safety perspective. Mm-hmm. The second thing is really, I think the exercise in the beginning of On Brand, which is the Venn diagram, is really the best way to start because you have to connect the dots between your past and your potential future.
Love that.
Because you need to lean on that connective tissue of skill set. Mm-hmm. So a lot of us accumulate tons of skills that are completely transferable to other industries, but that's not enough to make a pivot. Because you have to be able to convince someone else that even though you've never done that thing before, you can do it. So actually a great example is when I was at Marie Claire magazine right after my internship. I was the assistant accessories editor, which meant I was in the closet packing up shoes and bags. And I was getting phone calls from PR people pitching their accessories to be in Marie Claire magazine. So when I had asked for a promotion and was declined, by the way, I was making $23,000 a year. I just want to say that for the record.
In New York City.
In New York City, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I had a great wardrobe. So when I heard there was a PR position open at DKNY, I knew that if I sent my resume, no one was going to look at it. I have zero PR experience, literally zero. So what I did was I searched for that connective tissue, and I realized that if you look at the mirror image of your own job, so I spoke to publicists all day. I had a sense of who was good at their job. I knew who I hated speaking to. Mm-hmm. So pulling that data together in my mind of like, what does it take to be a good publicist? Like, I can do that job. Now it's just a question of how I convince someone. Mm-hmm. So I called another editor at Town and Country, my friend Gretchen, and I said, listen, there is a job open at DKNY in PR. I know I can do this job, but they're not going to think so based on my resume. So can you drop my name and say and explain that because of my current job and what I do over at Marie Claire, I am more than qualified than actually someone who has PR experience. And that's what she did. And then I got the phone call from DKNY and I completely faked surprise. I'm like, oh my God, thank you so much for thinking of me. That's so nice. But it is that engineering behind the scenes. Yeah. And today I would say that once you figure out what it is you want to do, you need to think about all the places you can shape that narrative. Mm-hmm. So that's all of your LinkedIn, all of your, you know, social media platforms, really positioning yourself with the words that people will search for, right? Because mm-hmm. recruiters on LinkedIn, your bio is what shows up to a recruiter. They're not digging into the rest of it. So if you want to think of yourself as a marketer and you know you have those skills and maybe you have that experience, which I did at Donna Karan, but my title didn't include that, mm-hmm. you know, you have to shape it online so people can actually start to see you in that way. You can even say, you know, connect the dots between previously this is what I did, but right now I'm going into X. Mm-hmm. Taking on projects in the area that you really want to dive into, even if it's free work,
right,
just to get the experience to say that you've done it is really good. And then communicating it out to your network.
Right.
In this State of the Union address that you will write to them.
Absolutely. So let's dig into that piece in particular and talk about, maybe get your thoughts on how to prioritize the best ways to get those messages out, right? You could create a website. You can go on LinkedIn. You can go on Instagram. You can use Facebook. You can use Twitter or now X. You know, all these things, it's mind-numbing how much time you can spend. And if you're doing this on your own by yourself, it's not really sustainable, the idea that you're going to check every box. So how would you prioritize which areas you should really invest in?
Your website's non-negotiable. Mm. If you are starting your own business, you need to have a website. Your LinkedIn is non-negotiable, and that is a platform that you should lean into. I think it's always about thinking, who are your stakeholders and where do they spend time? Mm. So if the people you're trying to attract are not on Instagram, don't waste your time with Instagram. I'm sure they're on LinkedIn. I'm sure you would want to send them to a website. So those are the two places that you have to focus on. Mm-hmm. But I would say you need to check a couple boxes, and it may be, and I detail this in On Brand, because it could even be the kind of thing where you're like, okay, I'm going to lean into building the website, making sure I'm active on LinkedIn, speaking about what I'm doing, and showing my thought leadership on what it is that I do. And maybe I also want to do a podcast. Mm. Maybe I want to start a newsletter or a Substack. So you do have to think about the levers that you want to pull to be able to communicate, because repetition is reputation. And if people are not hearing you speak about your craft, they do not know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And as you talk about in the book, you've got great quotes and great, you know, very specific tactical tips and tricks, but people fill in the blanks themselves. If you're not creating your story and your narrative, other people will fill in the blanks, which I think is such a smart, you're absolutely right. It's a really smart way of thinking about that.
I mean, filling in the blanks is better, but what will really happen is they'll make up their own version of your story.
Oh, and even worse.
To me, a strong personal brand means that you've done the work to shape your narrative, you've done the work to share it with your community, and now you're arming them to be able to speak about you when you're not in the room.
Yeah. Let's pivot a bit and talk a little bit about how you sustain your brand once you've made a career pivot, you have made some of these investments that we've been talking about. But let's talk about sustaining that brand over time and some, you know, specific tactical tips and tricks that you would recommend.
So OnBrand has what I call mental gymnastics exercises, and there's an actual workbook in the hardcover and also the paperback. When you go through that, you really think through your content pillars. And I like to think of social media as a dresser drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever platform you're on or focusing on, each of those drawers is another focus. So they need to be able to make sense together. Like in your bedroom, in your dresser, you might have, you know, your socks and your pajamas and maybe some t-shirts and shorts and underwear. You're not putting pots and pans in another drawer in your dresser, right? So from a content perspective of how you're messaging online, you need to think through what are your areas that you are able to play in.
Mm-hmm.
And where, what are your guardrails? What should you leave to somebody else and really shape, okay, these are the things I'm going to talk about on LinkedIn. And it could be something different that you focus on Instagram, but it can't be too far away because then you start to get into a place where there's brand confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So really thinking through and working through those exercises help you stay focused. And you do need to, again, repetition is reputation. Just because you said something once doesn't mean anyone knew or cared or remembered. So you have to message over and over again in new and interesting ways. And the problem with that is you start to become someone who's just talking about themselves all day.
Right.
And nobody wants to hear you do that. So just because you post something once doesn't mean anyone saw it. Even if they saw it, they don't remember. So what you need to do is create a cadence where you're repeating your messaging in new and interesting ways over and over again. But the problem is that you don't want to become one of those people that everyone hates where you're just talking about yourself all day.
Mm-hmm.
I have a quiz in my book, like, how do you know if you're bragging? Like, this is very important. We do not want to become the villain when we're trying to be our own hero, right? So what you need to do is follow what I do, which is this 1-to-5 rule. For every one time you message, maybe you're sharing about your services or you're sharing a win or an accomplishment or you're talking about something amazing, you spoke on a panel, whatever, try to proactively promote and amplify 5 other people after that post. It's good karma. Your friends who you promote will be very appreciative. It's also really a nice surprise and delight because people don't expect you to share their content. They expect, if you're a friend and you see it, to like it, maybe drop a comment, but to share it is an extra thing that goes a long way. And the more that you do that, the more that you actually educate people on how they can really work within their own networks too. So a really interesting example is I went recently to a conference in Palm Springs called Alt Summit. And when I came home, I wanted to talk about the panel that I was on. And the way that I did it was I shared, you know, how much fun it was to be at Alt Summit and our panel was so much fun. And this is who I was on the panel with. And here are the takeaways I shared.
Mm-hmm.
So I made it service oriented for people who are reading the post. And then everyone who posted after me from that conference who saw my post did the exact same format. They said who they were on the panel with, and then they shared the takeaways. And I was proud of that because it's everything you share should in somehow also service someone else if you can.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love what you just said. Imagine what a nicer place social media would be if everyone adhered to that rule, right? What a beautiful way to have real influence in a way that serves other people and it supports your own brand at the same time. I absolutely love that. I know that there are many, many things that we did not get to. I urge folks to pick up a copy of On Brand because it is fantastic. I have it in hard copy, in digital copy, and I'm pretty sure I have the audio version as well. Aliza, thank you so much. It was really great to have you here. And on behalf of both She Said, She Said podcast and the Southern Sea, we really, really are grateful that you participated.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much. You asked such wonderful questions and Southern Sea was such a blast. I can't wait to come back and I'm so glad to have met you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Okay, friend, I would love to know which aspects of this conversation resonated most with you. I think for me, as I had a chance to reflect on the conversation and really think about it, one of the things that I especially loved was how Aliza talks about the fact that you need to shape your own narrative. It's really important that you tell people who you are and what you want to do as opposed to allowing them to fill in the blanks, because they may, or and often do, in her words, fill in the blanks with things that you don't want to do or a brand that you don't want to be associated with. And so it's really important to remember to craft your story. That, of course, is a component of how we build influence. I've talked about this on the podcast many times. But as always, friend, I'd love to know what you thought, which aspects of Aliza's advice resonated most with you or sort of meets you where you are with what you're navigating. I'd love to hear. So send your thoughts my way. Also, friend, if I could ask for a favor, I would be so grateful if you would take just a minute and leave us a review. Those reviews really help us tell the algorithm that She Said podcast is something that is useful to you, is valuable to you. Plus, it would make me really, really happy to hear from you in that regard. So if you get a second, please be sure to leave a review. Until next time, friend, on behalf of She Said podcast and the Southern Sea, thanks so much for being here today and making this little investment in you. Take care.